We are Science Fiction Remnant, a podcast for sci-fi lovers spanning across books, movies, TV shows, and games.
This is Season 1, Episode 19, TV show The Expanse, Season 1, Episode 1, Dulcinea, for September 26, 2020.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Science Fiction Remnant. Thank you so much for coming back.
We appreciate you coming back to listen to us, and we hope that you find this episode as exciting to listen to as it was for us to create for you.
If you like this show and know someone who might like this podcast, please share it. It would help us greatly in growing this channel.
You can also follow us on Twitter at Sci-Fi Remnant and share any comments you have about this podcast with your friends and family. Thank you.
Also, visit scifiremnant.com. Okay, so today, it's my birthday.
Yeah. Happy birthday, man.
Thanks. This week, we decided to do another TV show. And is one of those TV shows that everyone that I know is talking about.
Everybody's watching, but we're not.
So I find it amazing that is, and this is kind of curious too, because The Expanse is a show that everyone that I know listens to, and we sit down and talk about it, we discuss it. But when I ask you if you know what the show was, you never knew what this was.
Clueless, man.
So you watched the first episode for the first time. Without getting into the show, and by the way, we're doing Dulcinea, Season 1, Episode 1 of The Expanse. Without getting into much details, what is your thought of that show? I mean, just high glance, so what do you think?
Just one word? Kick ass. I mean, I think that the concept, how everything is laid out, I think that was very creative. And I really did like how the characters are portrayed. Mm-hmm. And like every single one of them has a special role so far. Because, yeah. I mean, it's just the first episode. So there's characters that you've seen more of the show than me. Mm-hmm. And you told me there's characters that they just give you a minuscule introduction, but you don't really even know who they are. So for what the little I saw, I really like it. And I mean, I was impressed actually with the special effects and everything. Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. Nowadays, TV shows are just competing with movies.
And there's an interesting thing that you said. Because for the listeners out there, let me give you a short story. This show was recommended to me by someone because they know I love sci-fi so much. So I started watching the first episode and I kind of got bored. So, you know, fast forward maybe a year from that moment, and I'm sitting down with my colleagues at work and they're talking about The Expanse. And they ask, you know, do you watch the show? And I'm like, no, I watched the first episode and I found it kind of boring. And they're like, their faces of shock because they know how big I'm into sci-fi and I'm not watching this show.
You said that we're going to take off your sci-fi card.
So, you know, I was like, okay, maybe there's more to it than what, you know, what I saw. So I decided to watch episode 2, and from that moment on, I just went all the way. I mean, there was times where I actually went to bed at 4 in the morning, you know, because I couldn't stop watching the show. And I understand now why they were talking about. Now, the curious thing about that is when I had you watch the first episode, and I asked you your comments, and your reaction was completely different than mine.
Yeah, it's true. And I mean, I think that they did a great job. I don't know. You are more used to watching sci-fi than me. Mm-hmm. Your portfolio of stuff that you watch is a lot larger than mine. There are movies that you tell me they are musts of sci-fi. I didn't even know they existed. But when I watch this, I think that, I mean, there's good actors in there. Actors mm-hmm. that I do recognize.
Oh, yes.
And besides that, honestly, man, it looks like a freaking movie. you can immerse yourself in the story that is being told on the show. And I think that that's key for any good TV show to happen and have success on TV. It's that it can actually suck in the viewer into the story and basically transport you to whatever world or narrative that's going on.
It's immersion. Well, we talked in our second episode of John Carter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think key to sci-fi, and also we discussed this with the writer of the book, His Robot Girlfriend, the immersion. You know, to bring the person who's watching the story, who's reading the story, to bring that person in and immersive, kind of like we discussed, you know, the ultimate VR.
Yeah.
So I think the show actually does that great. And it does it with a twist, because we watch a lot of sci-fi, and you know, the reason what we watch it is because it's outside the realm of reality, you know, and it's kind of like escape to the real world. So you have stuff like, for example, Star Trek, Star Wars, you know, you get in ships and people don't bounce around the walls because there's some fake force creating gravity, which is something that doesn't exist nowadays. What makes this interesting is this show, the physics in this show, and I think this is where the big following for the show comes from, is how, although I admit it's not 100% realistic, right? Because it is still a sci-fi show, it gets the physics right.
Yeah.
So you have people walking around and they're using magnetic boots, just like they would use on, you know, a space station.
Yeah, because if you think about it, it's not like you can really attain with, at least with the structures that they show you, with their, these giant spaceships. You cannot really attain with the technology that we know of today, gravitational fields.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so far what we're talking about right now for gravitational fields, we're creating rounded ships that create a centrifugal force to imitate what the Earth does. So it makes total sense that there's going to be some kind of magnetic force pushing people down to the floor.
Yes.
But then again, there are some other areas that when I watched, I was like, huh, because there's a place, for example, in the show that somebody has dirt on the floor. Mm-hmm. And that's not floating all around the place.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, it's in the future, too. I'm sure that at some point we're going to reach some kind of technology that is going to be able to imitate that without having something rotating around.
Correct.
But, I mean, it was quite interesting. And I'm telling you, it immerses you. Now, the messed up part of the show is that it starts with a little piece that doesn't connect at all with the first episode, for sure.
Yes, and I'm kind of curious to see what you would think about that when you know as you watch the show, and you follow the episodes, they give you little hints and bits and pieces, but you don't really truly discover what happened, I think, until the end of the first season.
Yeah.
But you know, the interesting thing is, after watching this, you feel this is something that you're hooked. I honestly got hooked on the show after episode 2. So I don't know. I mean, are you hooked in episode 1, or you feel like you need to watch more?
So here's my take on how they made this first episode. Like, I want to slap the director, because it's like I say, like, imagine, like, you're going out, you're going to have a party, you start eating, and then you have a little drink, and it gets getting harder and harder. What this fuckers did is that they gave you all the hard drinks at the beginning, and then they told you, okay, no more drinking now, because they give you like a hardcore scene that gives you like, whoa, what's going on here, and then poof, it changes, and then we're just introducing your characters and what's going on in this world now, and let's forget about this shit that happened at the beginning of the show that is super dramatic and there's no mention of it throughout the whole freaking episode.
Yeah it's like, you know, that's it. It's a little piece of the future.
Exactly, man. It's like, what, man? I know what I know. So it's like, I mean, total hook, man.
Yeah, I agree. I had the same feeling. I was like watching, I watched episode 2. I watched episode 3. It's like, okay, are they mentioning this? Episode 4.
Yep.
And I just want to know. And it just keeps you wanting, you know, the information.
Now, I'll give a tip to the directors on this show. you gotta be careful doing this stuff because you don't want people ignoring the whole show just to catch up with whatever was happening at the beginning.
I get it. So for those of you who have not seen The Expanse, this is basically, I like to call, it's kind of like a three-story part. I mean, it's very intricate, but we have a police detective from an asteroid belt, a first officer of a space freighter, and a United Nations executive. All find themselves in the middle of this conspiracy. They could potentially create a war in the solar system. And I have to give it to the person who wrote the story, which I didn't know this actually came from a book. So I'm going to have to go get that book now and read it. But it's really interesting how this writer sees the future. Where, you know, you have the United Nations controlling Earth. And then you have Mars.
Militarized.
Yeah, it's completely militarized. And they're, you know, war machine, basically. And then you have the belt. And the belt is where all the miners and...
Space lump.
Space lump. Yeah. So... So the story goes like, okay, Earth is afraid of Mars because they don't talk and they don't know, you know, are they planning war? And they're always with this thing. Mars, you don't really know anything about Mars. They only mention it once in the first episode, which gives you a little hint as to, you know, how they see Mars just by the first episode, how they mention, okay, there's trouble. Oh, it must be Mars. And then you have the belt. They call them the belters, where they're just basically mad at everyone. Because as I say, they had water in the belt, and that water was taken away by Mars and Earth, and they're left with nothing. So they felt like... They're robbed and they're used by everyone else, and they had enough. So they had this, and you can see from the first episode how there are little points within the series. I think it was the location where they were at, and they were discussing how, and they were talking actually, like how they gotta revolt, they gotta rise up, and they gotta, you know, go to war to protect what is theirs.
Yeah. Actually, you got people like congregated and like this guy talking with like, what is it? Like a Australian Jamaican accent. Yeah. Like trying to revolt people and like trying to congregate and like, no, we gotta rise against da 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 da.
And that's another thing that I talked to you about. I really like how they made, you know, you have Earth, you know, then they're like, talking the normal, you know, language, and you don't know about Mars yet. Eventually, you'll see after you see the.
I won't be surprised. They're gonna be like beep boop, beep boop, beep boop.
But you know, like Earth, you know, and then you have the belters, and if you think about it, you know, these are people. If you go back to the possible creation of the belt was, and you can easily say, just like nowadays, say a corporation decided to make millions out of the asteroids, and they sent people. Who are they going to send? They're going to send miners. Mm-hmm. And the miners, you know, they're hardcore, and they have their own, you know. So over the years, you know, how these people are, you know, born there, and they create their own dialect, and that's what you're talking about. And I thought it was very creative, and I really like how they did that, where you talk to someone in this show or you hear them talk and you know pretty much where they're from.
Yeah. And I'll tell you this, I don't know if it's because of the difficulty that comes with the idioms and that creation of it, but you'll notice when you watch the show, it's not like everybody attains the same accent. It's kind of similar, mm-hmm. From everybody that is from the belt. But in something that I got from what I was watching is like, it feels like in this triangle of conflict, the belt seems to be caught in the middle.
Yeah, and that's it. And I understand. I feel bad for them because they're really being stepped on. And you know, that's why they just want to be free. They don't want to be taken advantage anymore. So I out of all of them, I feel the most for the belt mm-hmm. for the belters.
Yeah, definitely. So, and I mean there's so much into the show. You were mentioning about the detective.
Yes.
On the show. And it's kind of interesting because as you see him walking around the ship, it gives you a perfect in-view of how people live in there. You see separate social classes within mm-hmm. the belt station.
Yes.
So it's very interesting how they kind of walk you through their world, which is this giant station floating in space.
And you see firsthand also in that first episode, I don't know if you want to call it racism, but because, for example...
Oh, like a classism.
Well, look at him, for example, the detective, right? He has a partner, mm-hmm. and they're, you know, he's telling him, you know, you dress like an earther. You know, you better dress better because, you know, you can get in trouble for this. You can beat up, you can die. And even himself, he is a belter. He was born in the belt, right? And these are people, and you got to realize this, these people have never felt rain.
No.
They don't know what rain looks like. Well, it looks like, but tastes like, or, you know, feels like. They don't know what earth, mm-hmm. you know.
But here's a funny thing. He actually gets picked on by somebody in the crowd.
Exactly.
Because he looks like somebody that is from the earth.
Exactly. And he's like, you know, and he's always have to find himself to defend himself because he's born in the belt and mm-hmm. he is a belter. So, you know, that's what I'm talking about. There's this, people from Earth don't like people from Mars or the belt. People from Mars, which we don't know yet.
Yeah.
I'm assuming based on, you know, what we see, because they're completely absent from this episode, they obviously don't like the belt and they don't like Earth. And we obviously know the belts don't like either of them. So mm-hmm. we have a tense situation in the solar system where, you know, war could break out at any moment.
Yeah. And you could, if you want to simplify the concept of how everybody lives around there, you could say that human beings are living like in three separate factions.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
within the factions, there are also social hierarchies.
Exactly.
Because even in the belt, I kind of noticed that it's not like everybody's the same within the belt.
Mm-hmm.
There's higher social classes. I think that they depict that because one of the things I noticed is that what the detective is looking for is like a high class or a rich person's daughter that went missing in the belt.
And if you notice, the only reason why he's finding out is his boss told him, you know, it's off the record, you know, investigate this person. This person is the daughter of a major investor.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about money. And this guy is a multimillionaire, invests in the belt. So now he has to find his daughter. It's a missing case. But completely off the record.
Nothing off the record is good, man. It always ends up in trouble.
So, in this show, we have, this episode, we see a couple really cool things. If we look at, for example, back in Earth, this person, in Earth has, I'm assuming she's a UN executive.
Yeah, because they see her on the TV. They were looking at her from the belt, sitting in like a congregation, like kind of what people are in the UN, actually, nowadays. Uh-huh. And they're looking at her on the TV.
I think they call it Avasaral. I always have a problem with it. Avasaral. She's basically... A very influential person in the UN, and they caught this terrorist from the belt, and they had him hanging from hooks on a wall. So I find that really interesting because she's telling this guy, you know, you're trying to hurt the earth, right? You're a terrorist. You're trying to hurt the earth right now. And I find that really interesting that now the earth is hurting you back.
And here's the funny thing. The scene is like in Dust Dungeons where somebody is kind of gripped by their ankles or by their arms, mm-hmm. hanging up. But literally, when I looked at it the first time, I was like, what the heck? Why he doesn't just stand up and walk out of there? Because there's no chains or anything. Is there something just...
He's just hanging.
Like two hooks under his arm, so he could stand up and just walk out of there. And then I realized, oh, crap. He's not from Earth.
He's a belter.
He's not used to gravity.
So he's born in the belt. And
raised
now,
in there.
Yes, and his body is...
not conditioned for gravity.
Not conditioned for one you know, 1G gravity, which is on the Earth. So he's being, actually, he could die. Because his heart doesn't have a strength enough to push the blood flow back up with the gravity of the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then he doesn't have the strength. His muscles are not prepared.
And that's something that I was going to ask you, because I got curious. If it was a matter of muscle or a matter of conditioning, because in reality, you could do strength in the outer space. It's the whole element of gravity what affects the person, I think, because if you think about it, you can do exercise. You can literally imitate weight on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
You just cannot imitate the inertia that is created by gravity in the Earth.
But
so your organism and a whole... is not used to it so much that when she's talking to him while he's hanging on these grappling hooks, which he could just walk out of them. but she's telling him that your lungs are getting now the oxygen pressed down and pushed down by gravity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking it's not a mere matter of strength. It's more to do also with the element of gravity. Like, I don't know if you remember, Scott Kelly, he spent one full year mm-hmm. in outer space. He had terrible, terrible health conditions as a effect of being so long outside of gravity.
Well, and that's right there, what you mentioned, that speaks a lot about what's going on. We're talking about Scott Kelly. He was born on Earth, mm-hmm. and he spent a year in Earth, with no gravity. And like you said, he imitated or tried. Well, actually, there's no gravity there, so he had to do the exercises, just like the astronauts.
He exercised actually every day. I think more than 6 hours.
Exactly, and even at that, when he came back, he has all those problems. Now imagine someone that is born in zero G.
Now this is where I'm going. Like, I watched at least 2 or 3 documentaries about him. Mm-hmm. There's a whole TV show with more than 12 episodes mm-hmm. about his odyssey in space for a full year. And mm-hmm. here's the funny thing. If it will be, but it's science fiction, you know, you mm-hmm. cannot expect it to be accurately real.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the effects that he had, this guy that was 10 hours already in Earth, he would have been dead before 5.
Yeah,
because mm-hmm. the effects of what Scott Kelly has, like, man, I wouldn't wish that upon anybody. Like, he has his body swelling up all over the place, his blood pressure going up like crazy. Like, he has ankles, like, he was retaining liquid all over the body. So imagine somebody that never seen gravity in his life, he would have just swollen up like that, get terrible migraines, which Scott Kelly got,
mm-hmm.
and just probably die of a cardiac arrest or something within 5 hours at most.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things that happen to the human body, and it's because the human body I like to call it perfect machine, where it's adaptable to the conditions.
It's all a matter of conditioning for the
exactly.
body.
So this person that you see hanging in what's looking like a dungeon to me, he number one, he has his bone density.
Yeah.
So because he was born in the belt, he has the bone density necessary to be on the belt. Now, on Earth, I think you just blow wrong on him and you break a bone.
Yeah.
That's how fragile his bones are.
And it's true, because that's something. One of the things I remember about the experiment with Scott Kelly is that he lost, I think, about 12% of his bone mass
exactly.
in 1 year.
Mm-hmm. And now let's talk about the muscles, right? The muscles have the necessary strength for the, you know, the walking and the exercising that he does. So I'm assuming he works, and a belter works almost all his life, because mm-hmm. being a belter is like hard labor, manual work.
Hey, this guy looks skinny, man.
And yes, and when you come down to earth now, you have that G-gravity, the muscles can't pull up. And that's the reason why you see him just, you know, hanging there. He can't even lift a finger because of the earth gravity. And then we have the heart, okay? The heart got conditioned to push the blood at the gravity level for the belt. Now we have 1G gravity. Not only the heart is weak for that gravity, because it has to push the blood through the entire system.
Yep.
Now, it might be easier to push it down to the feet, and that might explain why Scott Kelly's got, you know, swollen feet. But, you know, you need it in the brain. You need to oxygenate the brain. So that's the hardest part for the heart, is to push the blood to the brain. And that's basically what's happening to this guy, too.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, you know, if you don't have oxygen in your brain, you become, you know, brain dead, and eventually you die.
Yeah.
And that's why she was saying you're gonna die if you don't speak. And, you know, this could be over soon, because they could put him back into this conditioned, or even ship him back to the
space belt.
Yeah. Not necessarily that, you know, he's a terrorist. They're not going to let him out. But I'm saying, yeah, like, put him back into space, you know, where he'd be more comfortable. So I guess
I don't think they're going to send a rocket just for him.
Well, no, they that's the thing. And in this world, that's just a mode of transportation. It's common, you know?
Okay.
So, but that, if you look at that, that's just a method of trying to get him to talk. You know,
yeah.
Remember, he had some contraband, dangerous contraband.
Stealth military technology.
Exactly. And they're trying to find out, because they don't want Earth to get attacked.
Yeah.
And she doesn't know where this attack, or who's planning the attack.
She doesn't even know if it's literally really the belt, or if it could be something instigated by Mars.
Mars or the belt, yes. Yes.
She doesn't know.
So, and now that's that one scene on Earth. And then, if we, you know, we talked about the scene on the belt, where we have the detective going around trying to find this missing case that it was given to him by his boss, and we also have now a scene on a freighter, okay, where the first officer, he didn't even want to be a first officer. So he's actually from Earth. And you can tell he's respected by the belters. Because the belters, yeah. I mean, you can see there's a belter that had an accident. They were patching him up. And he's talking crap about Earthers. And then he showed up. It's like, hey, you know, no offense. It's like none taken. And he continued talking crap. So you can tell he's being respected because of what, you know, what he can do. You know, he's... But the thing is, he just wants to go home. And he was expecting a release from I guess his command or whatever.
Commander or something.
And they had the XO had an accident. He broke. I'm assuming he was from Earth. And psychologically, you got to think about that too. You know, if you're from Earth and you're used to Earth, you're used to the ground, you're used to looking at blue skies, big oceans, and now you're seeing yourself in the belt. What kind of psychological issues would you have? And this is what we see on the XO. The XO basically broke psychologically.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the scene that I was telling you about. And this is a pretty famous guy. But that's what they show. This guy basically walks into the XO bedroom. Mm-hmm. And he sees firsthand, there's a bunch of drawings of plants and
it's
trees.
It's kind of funny because he's opening the door and he says, I don't want to see anything, hurry, okay?
Yep. And the first thing that he sees, I start seeing a bunch of little drawings of plants and trees all over the place, thrown on the floor, hanging on the walls.
Yes.
And then he keeps on walking and there's this little, like, door coming out of the wall with guns and rifles.
Yes.
Just hanging in there. And then he keeps on walking and he finds the guy on a pajama, literally just dipping his feet in dirt on the floor.
Yes, yes.
Next to the plants and babbling and talking nonsense. and saying how he missed the earth and stuff. And then he just shoots a screen with a gun.
And starts crying.
And starts crying. He just breaks down. And then they're taking him on a bet.
So that's when the character named Jim Holden, he gets asked to be the XO. Because obviously they lost the XO.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just, he doesn't want to have it. It's like, the guy says, like, you know, just keep it. Maybe it'll feel good in the pocket. So, you know, this guy, now they're on route. I think they're on route to the belt. When they get this distress signal. And because they don't want to, you know, when you deal about, you know, stuff about with the belt and anything to do about with the belt is all about money, 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 money. So they, if they get late, you know, they don't get a bonus. And you can kind of understand in space, when you have a delay on resources, it could potentially mean the difference between life and death.
Yeah. And I got a lot more questions about like the discrepancies of conditions mm-hmm. between the residents of each place. Mm-hmm. Like I do wonder if perhaps in the belt humans live longer because they don't have the conditions of gravity. Like I'm not sure if that's touching the show because it's just for the first episode. I feel like that is not really touched. Another thing that I wonder is like did they bring like samples of animals, because we saw rats and we saw birds inside mm-hmm. of the belt mm-hmm. and spaceship.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes you wonder. I mean, I don't know why they would want to bring rats. Like they're kind of a pest. So you just don't want them. You want a bird? All right.
I think they just stole away and with generations, and you know, just like rats are now.
I don't think that SpaceX is gonna have rats in SSI.
But no, you gotta think about this. These are miners. You know, the corporations hired these miners to go mine. You know, so I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but you know, it just kind of makes sense in my head. So you know, you have this distress signal come in, and the captain doesn't want to go check him out because you know they're gonna lose. What he mentions is the on-time bonus.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you know, you can tell that some of the crew have a trouble with this. If you think about it, you know, in space, kind of like the maritime law, when you know someone is in trouble, you kind of help out because next time could be you.
Yeah,
and you want someone to help you out, but they decided not to do it. So I guess in one of the scenes, Holden sits down and recovers that deleted recording, and he kind of realizes this is. I don't know exactly what was going through his head, though, but he felt a little more personal after he listened to it. So he decided, and this is not, you know, shown. He actually says this later on, but he actually logs it. And the captain finds out. No one knows who logs it. So now they had to act on it and had to turn around.
Okay.
And this is the reason why I'm mentioning this whole thing. Because here's another physics lesson. They got to turn around and then got to turn on the engines. Because, you know, when you're in space, you don't need to have the engines on all the time. So they were coasting. But although they were coasting, is the constant acceleration. They were en route to wherever they're going with the engines off.
Yeah.
You know, which is what really happens in space.
Mm-hmm.
Now they got to turn around. And they got to turn the engines on so they can pick up momentum in a new direction. Well, this is something they don't speak of in most of sci-fi, you know, stories or TV shows or movies. But the reality is, when you turn the engines on, you know, you have G's going to one direction. Although you don't feel it, your body got conditioned going that one direction in a constant acceleration.
Yeah.
Now you got to turn around. So basically, you're being stopped all of a sudden from that constant acceleration to then pick up more constant acceleration from a different direction.
It could literally just throw you onto a wall or the roof or the floor, depending on what it's turning to.
And they spoke of, I think someone, I was reading somewhere online where they're speaking, we're talking about 30 Gs.
Yeah, and that's the thing, because they do show something like that, Robert, but it's not as dramatic as reality should be. Because I don't know if you remember, there's like a sex scene. They're making love, and they're literally floating and banging up in the air.
Which
and the ship starts moving, and they just kind of flat bump, pow, on the bed.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you that scene is not accurate. Based on what I can say.
Absolutely not. They probably would have more realistically just like smashed their heads on the wall behind them or something.
Exactly. But, you know, again, it's a sci-fi show. They got to make it sunset.
They had to make it kind of romantic where they fall on top of each other in the bed, covered up and stuff.
Exactly.
You know?
So, I mean, if you think about it, you know, fighter jets, they pull 8 Gs.
Mm-hmm.
And they have suits. That push on, they kind of like...
It's kind of running liquid through all their bodies, right?
It presses on to help the blood flow go higher so they can withstand the pressures of the AG.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in this scene, you know, I heard it was supposed to be 30 G. That's completely...
Yeah. You'll have a full shape full of smashed human.
Exactly. So now, now if you look at what technologies they did, do you remember what happened prior to that jump? And if you don't remember, that's fine. I can go ahead and tell you. But
what about the guy that was mining outside?
No, when they were getting ready to turn the engines on, so they can pick up on the acceleration on a new direction.
Maybe not.
Well, that's fine. They all strapped down. That's the first step.
Okay.
They strapped down on their chair. And if you notice, something came in.
Oh, like a white liquid?
No, that's next. But there's a little clamp that go in and clamps them on their neck.
Yes, I remember that part.
That clamp is to hold their spinal cord in place so they don't, you know, crash it.
But that doesn't make sense because the rest of their body is not fully...
That's where the liquid comes in.
Oh,
the liquid is a gen. I kind of read this online, which is still sci-fi, right? That doesn't exist.
But anyway. It's a good excuse for it, at least.
Exactly.
That's
so
fine.
This is a
acceptable.
This is a gelatinous compound that gets injected into their body, so that to help the organs, the internal organs, not bounce around. Now, that kind of like, I thought the same thing you said. You know, that's sci-fi, you know, that's, you know, obviously not true, but it's believable.
It's possible.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm thinking, and the first thing after I come out to that realization, the first thing that I thought was, okay, what happens after the jump? Because we don't see, I mean, they just take that off and they stay with that liquid inside their body. Mm-hmm. I mean, does it dissolve?
And honestly, I mean, I'm just saying it's a good excuse because if you put freaking Jell-O at 30 Gs, you're still going to have mass Jell-O. You're going to have a dab on the wall.
Yeah. So, you know, that's the kind of thing that this, I mean, and I yes. You
it's
know, it
right,
is, it's
guys.
Not 100% accurate, right? But I have to give it to them. They do try.
Yeah.
And they try to make it realistically explainable with like nowadays physics.
At least they don't go ramble with the bullshit, you know? At least they try to play it down or something. So that's worth something.
Yeah.
A for effort.
Yeah. And everything. And I think that's why this show is so good. It's because they make a real attempt of making things believable and realistic.
Yeah.
Although they're not, that it is easy, you know, because it's using real physics. And they're trying to use, basically, I think the way that I think about it is they look at the physics problems on every scene, and they come up with innovative solutions or theoretical solutions to that problem.
Yeah.
And that's why every scene kind of makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I honestly think this is a reason why this show is so, you know, as famous as it is right now. And I don't know if you know, but this was a sci-fi channel original. And I think they got canceled after season 3. And everybody got really upset because it was a good show.
Oh.
And Amazon picked it up for season 4. And now we're waiting on season 5. And
oh, so we're watching this first season stuff, but it's not really original from Amazon.
Correct. But they bought it, so...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, they have the whole
That's library. Pretty cool. That's pretty cool, actually. And it's nice to think that there are some shows that are so good, somebody else will pick them up and not leave it unfinished. Because there's many sci-fi shows that we have watched. I mean, just to name one on the top of my head, Kyle XY.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that was such a good show.
Yeah.
And the one for Battlestar Galactica that you showed me, that the girl was like in a virtual world and came into a machine.
Oh,
It was,
yeah, it was the name of the planet. God, but I know which one. Which
you're yeah, talking about. Like these are good these show. Are very good shows, and they don't make it for two seasons. There are many more. There are many more. We'll be just naming shows here if you just continue.
And I think that's one of the positive things about the era of streaming services.
Yeah,
because many shows like. You know, just to give you an example, Netflix wants to, you know, game on nostalgia. So they might pick up shows. Like one example that obviously has nothing to do with sci-fi, but Full House, for example, had a very big following because of nostalgia. And they remade it. So because of the new streaming service platforms nowadays, they are considering now more and more to bring shows out, you know. One show that I can put, that I can mention to you that is completely sci-fi and anime is Cowboy Bebop.
Yeah.
It had a big following. There's a couple of movies out there too. Netflix picked it up. We don't know when the show is coming up, but
it looks promising.
Is yeah. So that's one of the good things about it is that hopefully someone in a streaming service will see a following in a specific story and will pick it up.
Yeah. You know, absolutely.
Look at Firefly.
Firefly, man. Oh, my God. That's a great show.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, this show is... And I can't wait for you to pick up and kind of watch the rest of the episodes.
I mean, I'm that curious about Mars. Another thing that I wanted to mention that I find kind of nice is how they show you monuments of the humanity that still stand. Like, they show you... the Statue of Liberty. They show you this New York City, and you can still see World Trade Center standing, the new one. So you can see these landmarks that somehow, don't ask me how, they made it through so many years of human evolution, and they just still look like they were, plus a bunch of other buildings. So it's interesting. It's kind of that element of sci-fi that we like so much that kind of blends what's real with what's not real.
And for the lovers of, you know, tabletop games, you know, like D&D, I heard there's actually a game.
Oh, really?
A tabletop game for The Expanse.
Cool.
Where you can pick which, you know, faction you're in. And, you know, you can just play along with that. So you can be a Belter, you can be a Duster, Mars, or you can Duster. Be an Earther. So, yeah, this show is... I particularly love the show. And again, I picked it up after episode 1, season 1. And I just can't wait for season 5.
Honestly, so far I've been watching, I can give confidently this show 9 out of 10. And that's a high rating for me.
Nice, nice. So you guys, let us know what you think. I mean, this is a really good show. And to be honest, most of you, I'm willing to bet that most of you already seen it.
Yeah, I mean, let us know. Have you watched it? Have you not? Go ahead, man. Girl, do it. You're not going to regret it. I think it's a great show. I think it's a show that even if you're not crazy fan about sci-fi, you're going to enjoy it. It's just great. It has a great narrative. It will keep you hooked. It has fun things. Well, not fun like ha-ha-ha fun, but like it'll keep you hooked and interest in what's going on. I think that it's being well made and the quality of it. I mean, it's what I'm saying. TV shows nowadays, when they're good, they're not just good on the narrative. They're getting good at what you're seeing. I mean, at the beginning, that little short scene that you see that has nothing to do with whatever the heck is going on in the whole show right so far.
Yeah.
But I was asking you, and none of us could come to the realization of what the heck they're doing. But, I mean, you look at the hair floating and everything, and, like, how did they do that? Like, it looks real. It doesn't look like computerized special effect, and that's it. So, and all the effects. So it looks good. It looks like a movie. I think it's worth your time.
It's really amazing. And you guys, I don't know if you guys know, but we do have a Discord channel. You know, we could discuss this. You know, if you use Discord, you know, just the link is in our description. So join us and let's discuss this. Let us know what you guys think.
Yeah, hit us up.
Well, this is the end of our show for now. Please let us know if you like this episode.
And if you have any ideas about which topics you would like us to discuss in the next episode, just reach out. We'd love to hear from you.
Remember, you can follow us on Twitter at Sci-Fi Remnant, and if you like this podcast, share it.
And rate us in your favorite podcast platform. Trust me, we're probably adding any other ones that you like, so feel free to look out for us, and you will find us.
See you next time. This is Science Fiction Remnant, signing off.